word had arrived in Mexico City almost a year before. The Japanese were coming. Hundreds of them, led by a noble ambassador from the great emperor, their sovereign lord. A great galleon of 500 tons was being prepared. The news had set off a frisson of excited chatter and expectation in the capital of New Spain, what had once been the great Aztec city of Tenochtitlan. And now, they were here. The native Nahuatl lord, Chimalpahin, gaped in awestruck fascination as the procession wound across the roads that poked their heads above the great watery expanse of Lake Texcoco to enter Mexico City. As the visitors got closer, he could see that the first men marching held black lances straight up before them like Roman lictors. Then came the ambassador himself in a coach, and finally, a great mass of others bringing up the rear, leading hundreds of heavily laden pack animals. They are long-haired. Their hair reaches their neck from letting it grow long. They look like girls because of the way they wear their hair. They wear something like an ornamented jacket, doublet or long blouse which they tie at the middle, their waist, where they place a katana, an Asian cutlass, of metal. They seem bold, not gentle and meek people, going about like eagles. The Japanese ambassador in the carriage looked straight ahead, gazing opaquely into middle distance, as if the sights of this strange city meant little to his world-weary soul. The tension was palpable. All Mexico City had turned out to greet the embassy, but as with all great occasions, there was ample room for mistakes to be made. Indeed, aside from the mission's leaders, the Japanese had already been forced to surrender their weapons in Acapulco, the primitive seasonal west coast port which traded with Asia, after an unfortunate disagreement over who should present the diplomatic gifts they brought. This event culminating in a brief battle, several severe wounds, and one fatality. Chimalpahin suspected that the badly injured Spaniard, Vizcaíno, had double-crossed the Japanese, just as the Spanish had double-crossed his own people a century before to claim the great prize of Mexico itself. He wondered if the Spanish had designs on the Japanese islands. He thought it likely their appetite for others' lands was insatiable, but it was hard to conceive of them sending a force strong enough to such remote parts. And he had heard that the population of Japan was immense, with boys and even girls taught to kill from childhood. It was said that they were even happy to turn their sharp blades on themselves to atone for wrongs. The procession continued to the very center of the city. The embassy was to be housed in comfort and honor on the way to its ultimate destination, Rome. Chimalpahin felt this great embassy marked a new era. All-powerful God, in his great wisdom, had allowed the Spanish to conquer Mexico and drive out the devilry and idol worship that had held the Aztec people in subjugation. Chimalpahin, or to go by his christened name, Domingo Francisco de San Anton Muñon Chimalpahin, was himself a faithful servant to this new Deus. And now the word of Jesus could be spread even further, across the great ocean to Japan, to drive out distant idolatry. He lowered his head and gave a silent prayer of thanks before crossing himself. God was coming. The Japanese Lord Ambassador, Hasakura Suninaga, sitting upright and stiff in his coach, attempted to stretch his legs without the crowds outside seeing. He had been travelling for 5 months already, first through the accursed desert of salt water they call the ocean, then through the interminable dusty mountainous roads of New Spain. Now he had arrived in Mexico City, glorious, unquestionably, but still nowhere near his ultimate destination of Rome. Hasakura was there to redeem his family name from the disgrace his father had wrought through fraudulent dealings and subsequent seppuku. Short years ago, Hasekura had watched him passively as his father, kneeling and dressed in a ritual white kimono, had pierced his own belly with a tanto knife, before a kaishaku second had spared him more agony by swiping off his head. Lord Date Masamune, the arbiter of all justice and Hasekura's liege lord, had simply nodded and left. Later, Hasekura himself had been summoned to his lord's presence, but instead of receiving the same sentence as he had expected, he was given orders which were perhaps nearly as bad as death itself. Lord Date ordered him to journey around the world to the lair of the Catholics, Rome, to talk with the man they called their Holy Father, the Pope, and attempt to get his support for opening the Pacific Ocean trade routes between Asia and North America. And if the price of that was hosting more Catholic missionaries, then so be it. Hasekura's mission would take many years, and the chances of returning were slim. He had fought with distinction in Korea in his youth, but this mission was something else. But it was his only chance to redeem his family name. What was more, Lord Date had briefed him on the Shogun's suspicion that the Spanish had designs on Japan. Tsunenaga was not only an ambassador, but a spy. And so, with this weight on his shoulders, Hasekura stared straight ahead as his carriage rumbled on. But he could not stop his eyes being drawn to this new city as it unfolded around him. It wasn't Rome, but it was like nothing he had seen before. One approached a shallow lake on raised promontories before being encircled with ingenious man-made islands, on which stood a hodgepodge of houses and markets, docks and warehouses. Passing onto the main island, wide promenades revealed themselves. Tall houses, churches mounted with great crosses, and palaces of stone and brick with carved facades surrounded them. Nothing like the wooden, one-storied buildings of Japan. And what a diverse range of peoples. Natives of these lands, black-skinned people, Spaniards, and even some men who clearly looked Japanese, though they could be Korean or Chinese. The coach which he had ridden in the last few leagues drew up. He alighted stiffly and entered the edifice. They were in Mexico City for several months. Following orders, Hasekura permitted his men to be baptized, much to the delight of the local people. It was the diplomatic thing to do, and it also made a lot of sense to placate the local gods when traveling far from home. The Japanese kami clearly had little power here. He himself declined, despite the council of priests who warned him of the dangers of the journey ahead and urged him to look to the safety of his immortal soul. He was steadfast in his refusal. For Hasekura had more weighty matters on his mind than the rescue of his soul, already condemned to disgrace by his earthly lord. He wanted the drama of being baptized in the presence of King Philip III of Spain. This act alone would go a long way towards redeeming his family name and establish the glory of his lord, Date Masamune, in Europe. To a Japanese warrior of the time, these two things were far more precious than a mere token shot at the unproven but promising Christian afterlife. Baptism could wait a little. They proceeded to Seville, the only port permitted to accept ships and people from outside Europe. Having left the jurisdiction of the Viceroy of New Spain, they had taken up their weapons again, and Hasekura and his men proudly entered the city, dressed as samurai, with swords in their sashes, bows and spears held high in ceremony. After a whole year of travel, they had at last reached Europe. Only the second embassy in Japanese history to land upon the continent. They all breathed a huge sigh of relief. Their journey's end could not be much further, surely. Hasekura, though, fretted and worried. He knew that Mexico was one thing. Here in Europe's heart, where true power lay, his credentials might be better scrutinized. His lord's bluff could be called. For his clan lord Date Masamune was not a king, and Hasekura was not really a representative of the entirety of Japan. how would he be received? Would they receive him at all? King Philip III holed up in his study and pondered the Japanese problem. As a six-year-old, he had been fascinated to meet the first Japanese embassy in Europe, four Japanese princes who had travelled to Rome with the Jesuits in 1584, and had even embraced them at his father's bidding. They had been charming, pious, easy to communicate with, and not at all threatening. Youthful representatives of God's new children at the very ends of the known world. Then, the news of Christian persecutions in Japan had started. Tales of great hardship, forced apostasy by torture, and glorious martyrdom. It seemed that the conversion of the heathens was not going as smoothly as the young princes and the priest who accompanied them had claimed. Catholic Europe reacted with horror. Japan had been the great hope of Rome, a well of souls to replace the cursed Protestant heretics in Northern Europe. But Japan had turned from missionary heaven to missionary hell. And if that wasn't enough, those northern heretics had taken heart at news of Rome's problems in the region and redoubled their efforts to reach the fabled lands of riches. A battle for the soul of these new heathens was coming. Philip sighed and returned to the problem at hand. A tough-looking official Japanese ambassador in outlandish clothes was requesting an audience, with a formal armed retinue and making no attempt whatsoever to speak in a civilized European tongue, to assure him that all was well, and ask him to send missionaries and trade. He had a suspicion that trade was by far the most important of the two, and furthermore, he knew the truth. A disgruntled man called Vizcaino, who had previously led a semi-official diplomatic mission to Japan from New Spain, had written from Mexico to divulge the reality. This proud ambassador did not represent the great emperor. He was merely the vassal of a minor prince. Hasakura, jaded and exhausted, saw the way the wind was blowing, but he could no more inform Philip of the truth then Philip would be able to understand it. Japan's true so-called great emperor lived in poverty, far from the beating heart of Japanese power, and the clan who did wield power, the Tokugawa, could not be seen to send an embassy to a Catholic monarch, who, officially at least, they harbored great suspicions of and wished to hold at arm's length. Instead, the Tokugawa had shared ocean-going shipbuilding technology so that their relatively minor vassal, Lord Date, could send the mission on their behalf. Lord Date, in his turn, had sent an already disgraced underling as his envoy. Hasakura did represent the mighty shogun through smoke and mirrors, but should anything go wrong, the blame would fall on Hasakura alone and leave his lord's reputation intact. The Tokugawa could deny everything. Multiple sleights of hand which Philip couldn't or wouldn't understand. Eventually, the king granted Hasakura the reception of a minor prince's envoy, but, try as he might, the revelation by the ambassador that Lord Date requested King Philip to sponsor his baptism, and Hasakura's own sincere wish for immediate christening, melted the proud king's heart. And so, on February the 17th, 1614, Hasakura knelt, dressed in a pure white kimono, head bowed in submission, in the church of the Descalzas Reales. The harmony of the basso continuo rose around him and enveloped the space, giving glory to God for his mercies and the miracle of having a pagan Japanese samurai accept the holy rites. Hasakura could not help thinking back to the last time he had seen someone in a pure white kimono, the public seppuku of his father. Back in Japan, white was the color of death. Here in Christendom, it was the colour of purity and a symbol of the cleansing of sin. The latter, at least, was related. His father had purged his misdemeanours through suicide. It did not do well to dwell on such things. Hasakura had been ordered to do this by Lord Date, and he obeyed. But the church's angelic music the elated atmosphere of sanctity, the ghostly flickering of the candles in their sconces, all hinted at the divine. And as the priest intoned the prayer of exorcism, Hasakura's heart fluttered, and he felt lightning pass up his spine. Perhaps there was something in this Deus. Perhaps this god was indeed the all-powerful being these barbarians claimed. The king embraced him, followed shortly by his new godparents. He would henceforth be known as Francisco Felipe Hasakura. And so, Philip permitted Hasakura to proceed to Rome, despite the protests of his council of advisors. Madame de Saint-Tropez clapped her hands in pleasure as she sat in her carriage, her face glued to the glass. Before her was a magnificent sight. The Japanese ambassadorial train was passing through town, having been forced to make for port due to bad weather on the Mediterranean. Saint-Tropez had never seen anything like it, and never would again. Crowds surrounded them wherever they went, but they seemed not to notice or care. They continued dignifiedly on their tour of the town. Every now and again, one of them would nonchalantly take a small piece of soft paper, wipe his nose, then discard it. The crowds of gawping commoners pounced on each foul disposal of tissue, fighting for the privilege of possessing it. Madame did not know which was more amusing, the sight of grown adults fighting over a snot rag, or the fact that the Japanese would use and discard such an expensive and rare commodity with so little thought. Was paper really so cheap in the Orient? When she had visited them in their temporary residence, they had let her touch a piece of this paper. It was so soft, almost like silk. The Japanese ate alone, in splendid isolation, admitting none to their dining room save their Spanish escorts and the seven cooks and servants they brought with them. But Madame had heard rumors that they didn't eat with hands and knives, not even touching the food at all, but used two dainty little sticks held in three fingers. How wonderfully exotic and clever! What would these delightful Orientals think of next? After a few days, the weather calmed, and a small corner of France suitably wowed, Hasakura and his retinue continued on their Roman journey. Accompanied by the Pope's cousin, Cardinal Borghese, and 10 beautifully mounted knights, the Japanese mission processed piously as pilgrims through Rome's Porta Angelica to the sound of fanfares and drums. Hasakura was once more granted the high honor of a personal carriage. As the trumpets continued their curt calls of salute, cannon fire joined in as Hasakura's men progressed through the streets, gawping despite themselves at the magnificent St. Peter's Basilica and the five-pointed fortress of Castel Sant'Angelo. Rome's citizens lined the route, craning their necks from upper windows and balconies to see the wondrous event. The Japanese were here. Freshly shaved heads shining in the autumn sun marched through the streets, almost like toga-bound dignitaries and lictor-bearing guards of Rome's own distant past. A few days later, deep within the Quirinal Palace, garbed in a white silk kimono decorated with motifs of birds in flight and gambolling animals, Hasakura slowed and solemnly approached the papal throne. The Lord Ambassador went down on one knee, bowing his head humbly three times before kissing the Pope's feet as he offered the Lord's letter of greeting and submission to His Holiness. Hasakura waited reverently as the Latin version of his letter from Date Masamune was read out. Kissing the holy feet of the great, universal, most holy Lord of the entire world, Pope Paul, in profound submission and reverence, I, Date Masamune, King of Oshu in the Empire of Japan, humbly declare. The Franciscan Padre Luis Sotelo came to our country to spread the faith of God. On that occasion, I learned about this faith and desired to become a Christian, but I still haven't accomplished this desire due to some small issues. However, in order to encourage my subjects to become Christians, I wish that you send missionaries of the Franciscan Order. I guarantee that you will be able to build a church and that your missionaries will be protected. I also wish that you select and send a bishop as well. Further, as our country and New Spain and neighboring countries Could you intervene so that we can discuss with the King of Spain for the benefit of dispatching missionaries across the seas? For all the rest, I thoroughly rely on Hasakura and Sotelo, and shall ratify anything they may conclude and ratify in my name. When the reading was finished, after a moment of silence in the thronged courtroom, the Pope rose and warmly welcomed the Japanese ambassador who had travelled so far to his presence. Nay, he stated, Hasakura's very arrival was testament to the power of the Christian faith to bring together lords and kingdoms from opposite ends of the earth. Hasakura's heavy heart danced a speedy jig, and he felt the weight of all those thousands of miles of travel lift from his shoulders. To be welcomed in this way by the Pope himself was to have at least achieved something on this epic, but often lonely and fruitless seeming voyage. Later that night, a candle fluttering in the sconce, the Venetian ambassador pondered the words of D'Arte's letter. For all the rest, I thoroughly rely on Hasakura and Sotelo, and I shall ratify anything they may conclude and ratify in my name. This was clearly an appeal to the Pope to supply secret aid. Should His Holiness be bold enough to persuade King Philip to send troops from New Spain in Manila, perhaps Spain would find a new colony, and the Pope millions more souls. There followed a round of congratulatory feasts, masses, present giving, and honour bestowing. Hasakura became a citizen of Rome, gained a new coat of arms, and was portrayed in paintings, engravings, and print all over the continent. But he got little else. Nothing that D'Arte had asked for. Nothing more than effusive but meaningless words of encouragement. The Pope had passed the buck back to King Philip, and Hasakura could do little but wait. His fate was out of his hands. Even more so than he could understand. For back in his home islands on the other side of the world, another globe-trotting explorer was playing his hand. Before his visit, Hasakura had known little of Europe, but he had heard of a place called England. For on his travels with Lord D'Arte, he had, by chance, met one of the strangest men in Japan. The Englishman, called Miura Anjin. William Adams, otherwise known as Miura Anjin, sat with his new English colleague Richard Cox in the recently founded English trading post in Western Japan and tried to remember how to speak English. He had hardly done so since the death of his brother on the long voyage that had trapped him in Japan. That had been 14 years ago. In those years, he had first managed to persuade Lord Tokugawa he was not a pirate. Then he had learnt Japanese swiftly, been used as a shipwright, gunnery expert, navigational authority, and diplomatic advisor, and was swiftly promoted to high rank. He had been given his Japanese name, a wife, and a fief, with hundreds of farmers and warriors under his control. Not bad for a lad from the small town of Gillingham in southern England. The subject under discussion with Richard Cox this evening filled him with fire. They were discussing the Catholic problem. Cox had been sent undercover into Japan by King James's government to undermine Catholicism, end Spanish and Portuguese trade in the country, and to persuade the Japanese to invade the Philippines, thus ending Spain's rich trade with China. It was a lot to accomplish, and there was no time to lose. As soon as the first official English trade ship reached Japanese shores in June 1613, 4 months before Hasakura set sail for North America, Cox had sought out Adams and filled him in on the 15 years of English news he had missed during his long isolation. And now, they plotted. Cox asked Adams to take every measure possible to inform those in power in these distant islands about the nefarious Jesuit and Spanish attempts to assassinate English monarchs back home, and if possible, to arrange for Cox to personally speak with certain lords in the Shogun's inner circle. And so, the English spent the next few years feeding the increasingly wild flames of anti-Spanish feeling at the Japanese court, with a drip, drip, drip of information as fuel. The shogun, Hidetada, and his retired father, Ieyasu, were especially unimpressed with the information that the Jesuits believed regicide was an acceptable tactic. What business did these unwashed foreign barbarians have, effectively claiming their distant laws applied in Japan and threatening the stability and future of the newly forged peace? Hasakura could not know it, but everything he was working for on the other side of the world was being carefully destroyed by that strange man he had met briefly so many years ago, and the English machinations in Japan. Signs of trouble didn't take long to appear. Despite their Roman triumph, Hasakura and his men were no longer welcome in Spain. That much was made clear by the refusal of their request to stay in or near Madrid to await King Philip's reply to Date Masamune's letter. They were sent to Seville instead, Spain's exit gate, and told to await King Philip's pleasure there. While Hasakura had been touring Europe, King Philip had been receiving more and more reports of the increasing plight of the Catholics in Japan. The highest-ranking Christians were giving up their faith, being forced into exile, or executed on sometimes justified, sometimes trumped-up charges. It was a long wait, but eventually Philip consented to a letter. It contained little meaningful in it besides requests to support Catholic propagation, but it was a letter, and not unfriendly in tone. A victory of sorts. Though many of Hasakura's men had left for New Spain in 1616, the Lord Ambassador himself eventually took ship with his letter in July 1617. Remaining in Spain were dozens of samurai whom Hasakura had allowed to stay. He was not to know it, but no new Japanese person would set foot on European soil for hundreds of years. At the same time as Hasakura was sailing back across the Atlantic, Shogun Hidetada decided to suppress Catholicism and expel the Jesuits once and for all. It happened on September the 8th, only a day after Englishman Richard Cox himself had briefed key shogunal advisers on new information from Europe about Spanish and Jesuit involvement in regicide and interference in sovereign nations' government. Cox had been ecstatic, but Hidetada had decided to take no risks. He also confined the English and Dutch to the remote island of Hirado, and closed all the other English trading posts throughout Japan with immediate effect. This was a death knell to England's Japanese presence. Over the coming weeks, a desperate Cox was repeatedly refused an audience. Even William Adams was unable to change the shogun's mind. Hasakura remained in Mexico City for 5 months. While there, he was informed of the Catholic disaster by a certain Diego Santa, who had been expelled from Japan as a result of Cox's machinations. Significantly, all of King Philip's gifts had been returned with the deported priests. It was a strong message of rejection and dismissal from a superior to an inferior. The message was that Japan would have nothing more to do with Spain and its impertinences. And so, the missionaries who had been earmarked to accompany Hasakura to open their new missions in Date Masamune's territory were assigned to new tasks. Hasakura had truly failed. There would clearly be no more missionaries from Catholic countries in Japan. He knew that if Hidetada was serious enough to deport a representative of the King of Spain, then lesser priests would simply be executed. Torture, crucifixion, and burning awaited them. And so, it was with a heavy heart that Hasakura boarded the Date Maru in Acapulco. He had considered staying in New Spain and had allowed some of his men to do so. They decided to become barbers, of all things. As he watched the waves lap against the side of the ship and felt the cool breeze on his face, he contemplated the debacle. The Hasakura name would now be besmirched twice-fold. Failure of his mission and the criminality of Christian conversion. He had failed his lord, his ancestors, and his descendants. And so, after an extended stay in Manila, 2 years later, Hasakura at last made the final short leg of his journey to Nagasaki, and eventually wearily home to the far northern city of Sendai, Date Masamune's seat. It had taken 7 long years. Hasakura genuflected before his lord in the vast, tatami-matted chamber. In front of him, servants had placed the gifts from Europe, New Spain, and Manila in lacquered boxes covered with silken cloth. Date Masamune ordered his vassal to raise his head so they could talk. His eyes took in the walls covered in gilt paintings of pine trees, tigers, and birds, so intricate he felt they might fly out of the pictures and around the hall. First, Date received the gifts, among them a portrait of Pope Paul V and one of Hasakura himself praying. Then, the interrogation began. It lasted all day as Hasakura told of everything he had seen and all the events which had come to pass. The Pope and King Philip's personal letters to Date were submitted, along with translations, and received cautious approval. But when it came to the details of the breakdown in trade talks, the loss of the ship, and the failure to bring missionaries, Date rose up in a fury. Hasakura knew that at the back of his lord's mind, despite everything, he had harboured hopes that the mission would bring back secret messages of support, offers of weapons, and the rights to trade over the ocean to New Spain. Date's domain could have potentially become one of the most powerful in Japan, yet it was not to be. 7 years of travel, diplomacy, and an ocean of his lord's silver later. All for nothing. 2 days later, Catholic persecution commenced in earnest in Date's domain. All Christians were ordered to abandon their faith. If they did not, nobles would be exiled and commoners killed. Rewards for the denunciation of hidden Christians were to be generous, and henceforth no propagation whatsoever would be tolerated. Hasakura passed away 2 years later. While he had not redeemed his family name, he had not been punished further by his lord. It was the best result that he could have hoped for in the circumstances. Hasakura Sunenaga's grandson, Sunenobu, cursed the day the barbarians had brought word of their god to Date Masamune's domain. He cursed the day his grandfather had returned from the other side of the world, and he cursed the fact that his grandfather had not kept his stories to himself. Despite the interdiction against Catholicism, Hasakura had propagated to his family, and they had, in secret, kept the faith in their hearts long after his death. Several of their servants had been caught and tortured. Hasakura's father, Suneori, had been denounced. Now Sunenobu watched as his father, the ambassador's son, knelt for execution like a common criminal. His crime was not to have denounced Christians on his estate. His wife had been put to death 3 years before for similar crimes. But Sunenori was not permitted the honour of seppuku, and the family's title and land was to be confiscated. The blade came down, the head rolled slowly in the dirt of the execution ground, and blood welled like an ocean around it. This pool of blood was a symbol of the defences that Japan now built against visitors from overseas. No more would ships be free to land nationwide. Like Europe, they would have designated ports depending on their place of origin. Unlike Europe, travel and settlement within Japan would be prohibited, and would remain so for more than 200 years. And so, the second Japanese embassy to Europe was quietly forgotten. 2 centuries of isolation had finally come to an end. The Japanese ambassador, Iwakura Tomomi, in the midst of the grand world tour which would come to be called the Iwakura Embassy, covering 120 cities and 12 countries across the globe, stood in baffled silence. The Italian librarian, standing before him with a quiet smile on his face, had done something that, despite all the incredible things he had witnessed on his tour, truly surprised Iwakura. The grinning man had produced 2 letters from centuries ago, in Latin, but clearly signed in Japanese by a certain Hasakura, a samurai. Who was this man? How had he been in contact with Venice 250 years ago? The Japanese party conversed excitedly, perhaps a Christian refugee seeking aid against Tokugawa persecutions, perhaps a warrior from a defeated faction washed up on these far shores. On returning home, they determined to find out more about this strange, mysterious, and forgotten episode in samurai history. And so, back in Japan later that year, Iwakura spearheaded the rediscovery of Hasakura and his men's globe-spanning adventure. Artifacts hidden away by the Date clan for more than 200 years resurfaced, including the portraits, exotic weapons, and Catholic artifacts. The Emperor Meiji himself made a point of viewing the treasures during his tour of the Northeast in 1876, and Hasakura's achievements became part of the fabric of the less than a decade-old newly formed Empire of Japan. An old tale of global voyaging and diplomacy gave a new nation international ancestors and spurred it to a modern future. Hasakura would have given thanks to God for the delivery of his family name from disgrace and the honour done him by his future fellow countrymen and emperor. A fitting end to his amazing tale. It had been worth it, after all.